I'm George Kittle.
What's up? It's Brock Purdy.
And you're listening to the Niner Guys.
The Niner Guys.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Niner Guys. We knew it was going to happen. We knew it was inevitable that Brock Purdy would eventually throw a pick. The Niners were eventually going to lose. I don't know if very many people picked the Cleveland Browns to be the slapper of the reality of the NFL to the Niners, as everyone was picking them not only to win, but win big. And it didn't work out that way. Niners come home from Cleveland licking their wounds with the first loss of the season. No undefeateds in the NFL, actually. Now we'll get to that when we swing around the whole league. But Purdy didn't look good. The biggest thing I got to think is the injuries that, you know, were sustained coming out of that game. Obviously, Jake Moody's a topic. Kyle's end of game play calling is a topic for this week, and it's a lingering topic for those who have always questioned Shanahan. So the mistake on the lake was not this week. In fact, Cleveland looked pretty formidable defensively for sure. But Jerry, 5-1 now, the Niners pick up their loss. Your thoughts going into the game and your thoughts coming out of it?
Certainly, I had a respect for the Cleveland Browns going into the game. Not exactly expecting a blowout necessarily. Would I have liked to have seen a blowout? Sure. And after their first drive, when they cut through that supposed vaunted defense like butter, like hot knife through butter, and then when Fred Warner made that interception, you thought, oh, maybe it'll be one of those games. And, you know, it got to a point where I was embracing the 49ers as the best team in the league, that Brock Purdy was the real deal, and that Jake Moody wasn't going to be worrisome. And then after the initial proceedings, they go on and just lay an egg against those Cleveland freaking Browns and get my IBS all riled up in the process. Now, granted, the refs also fucked it up big time as well. But the Niners, I mean, I know you mentioned Shanahan, and it's funny because maybe it's because of the elements or whatever. I didn't really think about his play calling as being that, you know, problematic, because I thought that the Niners had their opportunities. It's just, unfortunately, Purdy had accuracy issues throughout the game, only completing, I think it was one pass for 1 yard in the second half up until about with 3 minutes to go.
Yep.
And it was concerning that Purdy was basically out of sorts once McCaffrey and Debo left the game with injuries. And the rain seemed to be his kryptonite as well, which does not bode well if the Niners have to win on the road in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And it also does not bode well that our defense ended up missing, I think they said like 18 tackles. Mm-hmm. And then the only time Nick Bosa got a sack was when he went untouched into the backfield. Yep. I mean, our defensive player of the year has basically been MIA, just like my confidence in Jake Moody. I never understood, as you know, why the Niners in this Super Bowl or bust season entrusted their championship fate to a rookie kicker. Nothing against Moody, but there's just too much at stake. I mean, wasn't that part of the reason why they were uncomfortable with Trey Lance, and they moved on from Trey Lance because they just didn't want to endure the growing pains? Yet,
Gary,
now they're inexplicably okay with dealing with the player's inexperience in the biggest moments, which is what made the officiating so painful, because their calls came in the biggest moments, or their poor calls, right? Not calling PJ Walker's fumble. And so it was, you know, and it negated a would-be scoop and score by Bosa, and then calling that personal foul that wasn't on Tayshaun Gibson, which extended the Browns drive that led to their game-winning field goal. I feel like those two incidents were game-altering calls that really, really impacted the game as much as anything else. So just a really disappointing game, to be sure.
Really thought this was the week. I really thought it was. You're going to get through an entire episode without saying Trey Lance, and you did it right off the bat. So,
because I know you love it.
I will lose the over-under on how many weeks we continue to go. So, yeah, let's talk about a few of those things. Because, I mean, you mentioned Purdy. Yeah, certainly didn't have his best stuff. Certainly was off target. I've heard that the game plan was very Debo heavy. And when Debo went out, it basically cut off a third of Kyle's play sheet. This was going to be a physical get the ball to Debo in multiple ways. And whereas Ray-Ray McCloud came in to take Debo's spot, Ray-Ray is not that guy. You saw him on a couple jet sweeps, but he was not the tunnel screen guy who's going to run over some guys. He was not the over the middle and we're going to take on the safety player. So I think losing Debo was actually really unfortunate for this game, since this was going to be a Debo game. I'm still, you know, as for Jake Moody, you know, we saw it in preseason. Everyone got worried. He went into the regular season. Everyone started feeling good. It's a little bit worrisome that this was the first game on the line, got to make the kick at 41 yards. And he pushed it right. And it was his second miss of the game. He pushed an earlier one that was from 53. Same thing, pushed it right. So again, I think if you're the Niners, you're certainly going to play the cards that you dealt yourself by having Moody. But would you give Robbie Gould a call?
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Robbie hasn't picked up a football in probably 6 months, since he's been seemingly golfing every other day. But it's now certainly something that's going to have to be worried about by fans and concerning for fans until he hits a long game winner or a pressure situation. I will say, granted, not the same situation as playoffs, but remember last year when the Niners played the Raiders and Robbie missed a 41-yarder, which would have won the game. Now, granted, the only difference was that game was tied and the game went into overtime. So instead of the Niners winning on a walk-off Niner field goal, he pushed it. They had to go to overtime. And that's when Bosa took over. They got the pick and ended up getting it. So, again, it's one of those things that Robbie was so nails in the playoffs. That's what we remember. We talk about whatever he was, 60 for 60 in his career.
But did he not kick the game-winning field goal in that game that you're talking about?
He did.
Well, there you go. Right? So, yeah, okay, he missed one.
Well, that's the point.
He came back and we hit the game winner.
Yeah, but that was the point. Like, if they weren't down, had the Niners been down, he would have kicked it and missed it and they would have lost. That's what I'm saying. It's not exactly the same. Simple point is the Niners kicker missing a 41-yarder. We don't have to go that far to see that it was, you know, 8 months ago. So I think the Niners really miss Dre Greenlaw. I think that's going to account for a lot of those tackles, just because he is so fast and so impactful that he can blow up plays by himself and get the tackle. I think he helps free up Fred Warner. I think obviously Warner is out there trying to play Superman in terms of multiple linebackers when he's trying to direct Oren Burks or Flanagan Fouls, whatever it is. So I think missing Dre Greenlaw was probably more impactful on the defense than most people realized or thought it was going to be. But the injuries, we saw McCaffrey get the oblique. He went out, came back in for one play, then had to go to the locker room. He was done. We mentioned Debo and his shoulder. He went out early, and Trent Williams went down with an ankle sprain. Granted, a couple days later, everyone's getting the medical report. All of them are now listed to day-to-day. CMC's actually listed, according to Matt Maiocco, as a simple pain tolerance thing. So can he withstand the pain and play against the Vikings Monday night? Can Trent has a low ankle sprain, not the high ankle sprain. So can he go on Monday night? And then, you know, we'll see about Debo. But what was the most concerning for you? Because I know we've talked about Moody, Bosa, the defense. Where does Kyle's, not his overall game management, but that end of the game, basically with, 40 seconds left, Ayuk got him into what was going to be long field goal range, and then they ran one play to Mason up the middle for like 3 yards, and then Purdy spiked it, and they still had a timeout. And they left the game with a timeout in their pocket. Is that Kyle's conservative nature? Was that just Kyle having the confidence in Jake Moody, thinking, well, we're at 41, we're good? Or is it kind of what a lot of people are talking about in terms of Kyle's reluctance to not so much go for the jugular, but be more aggressive in situations? Like, don't settle for 41 if you can get to 36, right? Don't settle for 41 if you have a timeout. You got the whole field. Like, you could run a screen, a slant. It doesn't matter. If they get tackled in bounds, you get a timeout, but you're 5 or 6 yards closer. So any problem, or is it just nitpicking because they ended up losing?
I think all the above. When watching it on television, I honestly couldn't tell how bad the elements were. Certainly not like the monsoon game that Trey Lance played in. I know how much you like when we mention Trey Lance, which is why I mentioned it again.
No third string quarterback gets more run than Trey Lance.
But I mean, so that's the thing, right? Like, I don't know how bad, but Kyle Shanahan certainly coached the game in some respects like he was worried, you know, where he was conservative on occasion. But yet, on the same time, I want to say towards the end of the game, I think this is where fans or those who were questioning him was, he threw the ball a lot towards the end of the game as well. Like, instead of running it, which you're like, why not run it? Why not run Mason? And I don't know if it's because he started losing confidence in the offensive line, because the offensive line didn't look great either this past game. So we do know Kyle's tendency to go back into his conservative shell when he starts losing faith in something that he's seen. But yeah, I mean, and as far as like, you know, what he, I mean, Jake Moody hadn't burned him yet. Yes, he missed the 50 plus yard field goal under those elements. He probably didn't think anything of it. So he's like, no, Jake should be good. He'll nail this, right? Yep. So I think from that standpoint, he was very confident in Jake Moody. So that's probably why he ended up taking the course that he did. And in Jake Moody's defense, right? Like, if you think about the Cowboys game, well, he didn't have to kick any field goals in that game because all they did was score touchdowns. So I don't know, maybe could that have impacted his field goal kicking? And then you add on top of it all the wind and whatever that he had to deal with not having kicked in Cleveland before, which is, again, why, for me, assuming Robbie Gould has not gone into semi-retirement, as you've seemingly mentioned, I didn't know that. I thought that he's still chomping at the bit to get back into the league. So he would be kicking. He would be staying in shape, that he wouldn't just be golfing this whole time and just
not according to the golf scores he keeps posting on Instagram every 2 days. Like,
well, I mean, you can only do so much working out as a kicker, I suppose. I mean, well, that's, it's not like you're going to be hitting the weight room.
I agree. That's why he doesn't post any like, oh, I'm still, you know, keeping the leg ready. But, you know, it's just like, look at me on 18.
Maybe because he figures the resume speaks for itself. He doesn't need to post any of that. I don't know. I mean, he's not, what's that kid's name? Blankenship, who had to post stuff like, hey, look, I'm still working out. Call me. Don't forget about me. Rodrigo Blankenship, right? I think it was his name.
Yep.
But anyway, so yeah, as far as Moody's concerned, I mean, that's just the thing, right? Like, I would bring back Robbie Gould because I think it's just too dangerous to be relying on a rookie kicker who's kind of given me the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde vibes in terms of, I don't know what I can count on. And again, no fault of his own. Just, he's a rookie. And we've been through this. The guy wore the same number as Jake Moody. Doug Bryan, number 4, drafted him in the whatever third round, like same as Moody. And despite being a prolific kicker in college for the, you know, for Cal, I mean, he came in and had his struggles. Again, like a lot of rookies. Who's one of the best kickers right now in the league? Young Hoku for the Atlanta Falcons. He got cut from the Chargers his rookie year because he struggled early on. Yeah. Even though he won the job out of camp, right? Who's doing well now? Some rookie kicker undrafted for the Cowboys. I don't even know his name. I just know he's been doing well.
Yep.
And that's just the thing with kickers. You just don't know. So drafting one so high, then banking on him being nails when you're on a path or hoping to be on a path to win the championship. I don't know, man. It's just not the path that I would have taken personally. I guess you could say, yeah, like the injuries. I guess for me, I would personally keep McCaffrey out of the Minnesota game, along with whomever else is like borderline in the health department. Because after playing the Vikings on Monday night, it's another sort of short week, right, before playing Cincinnati.
Yes.
So, yeah, so I would consider keeping some of those guys out.
What percentage would they need to be at for you to play them? Obviously, no one's 100%. Trent, Debo, and McCaffrey are significantly under 100%, but at what
80%?
They'd all have to be 80%.
Yeah, which I don't think they are. Because again, I have my eyes on January, you know. I have my eyes on the playoffs. Now, I know that's a dangerous way to live, right? To be looking so far down the line. But at the same time, it does you no good if you play McCaffrey and then he's lost the rest of the season.
Well, that's gonna lead us into kind of the rest of the league, but let's talk just in terms of playoff formulation. We talked about no undefeated teams. That's because the Eagles lost to the Jets, dropped to 5-1, and the Lions won, and they're 5-1. And while everyone anticipated the Niners, Eagles battling for that number one seed, the Lions have, you know, gotten into there, and the Lions, their schedule is significantly easier than either the Eagles or the Niners. They still got two games against Chicago, two games against the Vikings. They still play the Broncos. I mean, you're talking about a team that very well could, you know, get into that 13 win range. So how much of it, as you're looking towards the playoffs, is not only the playoffs, not only the number one seed, but we've got to at least go in at number two where we get two home games. We've got to play whoever gets the number. We're going to have to play the Lions or the Eagles, but we need to play them at home, right? Like, how much of it is that when you're considering, should the Niners be able to beat the Vikings? Up and down the roster, yes. We'll go into some of the Vikings preview a little bit later, but it's kind of why the Niners talked about getting off to the fast start, so they didn't have to play catch up in the second half of the season. So games in the second half of the season that they thought were toss-ups or close games weren't going to become, you know, pretty much must wins if we were going to get to that top level. So how much of looking into January plays into the fact that, well, you know, we should play. Maybe we play Debo, but not CMC. Maybe we play Trent, you know, like where is that balance?
Of course, the most ideal scenario is to have the higher seed, is to have home field advantage. But it does you no good if your team is banged up, just to, you know, really banged up to try to get that top seed. Mm-hmm. I think you're better. If you were to say, okay, would you rather have a 60% Christian McCaffrey, but you have the number one seed, or an 80 to 90% Christian McCaffrey, and you have like a number two seed? I would take the 80 to 90% Christian McCaffrey. Now, of course, after seeing the way Purdy performed in under the elements, that worries me, right? I mean, I'm not worried that the glass slipper has fallen off, but I am concerned that, you know, he's sort of diminished if he's playing in inclement weather, you know, and on top of it, he does lose some of his weapons around him. I mean, we all know Purdy's greatest attributes are his processing abilities and his accuracy typically in throwing the ball. But if the conditions around him are not ideal and he seems to get stymied because of it, I mean, I would say worries me when in terms of not having the the home field. But again, you just can't have it all. And I'd at least rather have my team as healthy as possible in the playoffs. That's my number one goal.
Talk about the rest of the league. We mentioned the Eagles lose. Eagles lose to the Jets on kind of a crazy situation. Did it surprise you that the Jets had never beaten the Eagles in the history of the NFL?
Yes.
That seems – the NFL's been around for 100 years, and I know they're in separate conferences, so they don't play – but never beating the Eagles, I thought was – I mean, that's shocking. I mean, unless you're an expansion team like the Texans or even the Jags where you have such a short history, how does not every team have wins against one another? So
well, shocking that was the case and that their first win came – with Zach Wilson as the quarterback against the Eagles, this current iteration of the Eagles who just went to the Super Bowl.
What else caught your eye around the league?
Well, before we go around the league, what caught my eye was how DeJuan Jones, the right tackle of the Cleveland Browns,
yep,
completely ate the lunch of Nick Bosa. Now, I don't know what's going on with Nick Bosa. You know, if there is an issue, because, I mean, he's getting paid to be a game wrecker, but 6 weeks in and there hasn't been one game with Bosa's signature on it. And then now we see that his lunch was handed to him by the rookie DeJuan Jones. And as our loyal listeners will recall, I pounded the table for him to be drafted in the third round over the likes of Jake Moody and Cam Latu. So either Jones is on his way to becoming some all-pro or something's amiss with Bosa.
Not to give Nick any excuses, but, you know, this is if he had been in camp on time and he would have got his full 6 weeks of training camp, well, we just passed the six-week mark. So should he be more impactful? Probably. You know, I mean, the analytic community will tell you he's, you know, his win rates against the tackles are off the chart. His impact in terms of rushing and pressures is, you know, the highest, you know, in the top few in the league. He's not producing the sacks. So should he be more impactful? Does he need a signature game? Yeah, I think he does. So I'm not ready to say, I mean, I don't believe he's a sign the contract, mail it in guy. I still think he's, you know, looking to be not just the best player, the one of the best ever type thing. So, yeah, I think he can still get on track, but I think you're starting to see, yeah, the holdout did do something because, yeah, he looks in peak physical form, but, you know, he didn't get to go up against Trent Williams like he usually did all offseason and get his pass rushing moves and his counters and all that kind of stuff. So,
I mean, even Randy Gregory was a factor on Sunday.
Yeah, Randy Gregory was a factor on Sunday, which, you know, we didn't get a chance to mention, but, you know, he got in there a few times, so maybe that's what it needs. Maybe they needed that opposite guy to at least be willing to, you know, occupy somebody rather than slamming everyone towards Nick Bosa. We'll see. We'll see.
So now I was just so upset by the Niner loss that honestly I didn't watch any more football after. I think the only game I heard about was the New England versus Las Vegas game because it's basically Patriots East versus Patriots West.
Yep.
And Mac Jones was terrible once again. Same with Jimmy G, except he got hurt once again. Yep. And Bill Belichick lost once again. But at 3-3, I think the Raiders might actually have a chance at the playoffs, which means I think they need to move off Jimmy and trade for a quarterback who can actually stay on the field. So if I'm the Raiders,
give me a name.
I've got Kirk Cousins on my radar.
Well, he might be on your radar, but what's your feeling that Kirk Cousins already said he's not waiving his no trade clause?
Is that a business move? Is he trying to extract money? Is he trying to get a contract extension? Like, if you trade for me, you need to give me more money. I don't know.
Yeah. I do think it's a business decision, but I think it's more the business decision of I'm going into my free agent year. You're going to send me to the Raiders or the Falcons. You're going to send me to one of these teams where there's no guarantee that I can lift this team to the playoffs. And if I don't lift this team to the playoff, does my image take a pounding? Because right now, his team might not be very good in Minnesota, and we're going to get the preview Minnesota coming up, but he's in the tops passing in the league, right? He's got all these yards and all these, you know, statistics. So from a business standpoint, he can just go, look, I'm doing my job. We got no running game. I just lost Justin Jefferson for a month, and I'm doing everything I can to have this team in the playoffs. Where if I go to the Raiders, yeah, I could have Devontae Adams. I could have Josh Jacobs, but how comfortable does he feel with Josh McDaniels and the rest of the team to get to the playoffs? Now, some people say, well, just go, because if you get into the playoffs, it's just going to raise your portfolio even more. So I just thought it was interesting that when Cousins' name was floated a couple times, that he actually made, or his people, like, he's not waving his no trade. Could be leverage for, you know, a team who he really wants. Like, look, I don't want to go to the Atlanta, but maybe I would go to, you know, the Raiders. So
Atlanta, you think if something happened to Brock Purdy and the Niners came calling, he'd be like, nope, I'm staying in Minnesota.
Probably not. But I think that, I mean, same, but well, here's the thing. If something happened to Justin Herbert and your Cousins, would you want to go to the Chargers?
Sure.
Oh God, no.
Why not?
Well, this explains why you did not watch football, because the Chargers are absolute, like, they are terrible. And it's all coaching. They have talent. Herbert and Allen, and like, their coaching is abysmal. Their coaching.
But when you say coaching, are you speaking strictly Staley, or are you also speaking on Mr. Let's put Ezekiel Elliott at center, Kellen Moore?
Yeah, I'm talking about whoever's making the strategic decisions.
On offense or
both ways. Like, it just, if you watch the game, it was as if these guys were, it's as if these guys, maybe this is how they're playing. Like, it does, we are throwing everything at them, because if this all works, we're going to look like geniuses. And if it doesn't work, well, we're going to look like idiots, but we're willing to take the, we're going to be geniuses of it. Because some of the play, they're third and one, and they're going out of shotgun, needing 1 yard and like to keep a drive alive. And it's like, and they're throwing deep. It's like, they've been killing you all game. Like, why are you even trying this? And it was just this whole bad strategy that they had. Every time this is what they're doing. When they, you know, you'll talk about like, oh, you need to zig when everyone else zags, right? You need to do the, they do that so much that they're zagging off the page and everyone else is at least staying on the page. Like, you are so far removed from trying to do something to keep a drive going. It was an embarrassing showing, because in a primetime game, to listen to the crowd, to listen to the announcers, you thought, gosh, this is a game of two heavyweights. You know, this is Ali Frazier. And it wasn't. These are two mediocre teams at best, just completely talking about, you know, turnovers and all kinds of things. So that was frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose if the coaching staff, and like you said, I didn't watch that game, but if the coaching staff gives Kirk Cousins pause, I can understand why he would not waive his no trade clause. But I don't really think that anything is going to, I mean, unless somehow if Kirk Cousins goes to another team and he turns into, I don't know, Josh Rosen. I mean, I just don't think anything's going to change his value. He's a 36 year old quarterback who has certain limitations, but also brings a lot of this other stuff to the table: leadership, accountability, experience, yada, yada, yada. So I don't think, whatever it is his value is, it doesn't matter if he's on the, if he stays on the Vikings, rack up those stats, or if he goes to another team. I mean, I just, You know, and if I'm Kirk Cousins, if I'm a competitor, and again, I think maybe part of it is a family. Maybe he's like, I don't want to uproot my family unless it's the most ideal circumstance that I can't say no to. Maybe that's what it is. But as a competitor, this second half of the season, while you're incentivized to still play well because you're going to be a free agent, it's got to be hard knowing that it's a losing battle, that you're going to be going, whatever it is, 6-11, your final year in Minnesota, right? Like that's, I would imagine as a competitor, you'd rather go to a team that has a fighting chance of getting to the postseason, especially at this stage of your career.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I was, like I said, that's why I was surprised he even came out and said it, but I would think he'd be being put into the best possible spot to make the playoffs, because at this point you're 6 weeks in. If you go to the Raiders, I mean, you'd have to like lose all the games, right, for it to really be your fault. You know, if you go and you go 500 and you end up going 9-8 and you just missed the play, I don't think anyone's blaming you, right? No one's blaming you for not getting to the playoffs. I mean, some people will because we traded for you, but in reality, you're coming to a new team, a new offense, and you're going to try and put them on your back and raise their level of play. I think that'd be really difficult. And I agree. I don't think people would be saying you blew. Now, if Purdy went down and the Niners brought him in and he goes like 500, then you're like, dude, all you had to do was follow the recipe. Even Jimmy could do that. You couldn't even follow the recipe in your – so, yeah, I can see that. Other games of note, not a lot. I mean, from the grand scheme of things, we talked about if the Commanders lost to the Falcons, could there be a fire sale in Washington with, you know, Chase Young, Montez Sweat? Nope. You know, the Commanders went in and beat the Falcons, and now both those teams are 3-3. The Chiefs dismantled the Broncos. The Broncos still look like, you know, a dumpster fire. The Vikings beat the Bears, which I thought was a good thing for the Niners, considering – this point, as I'm looking at teams, you never, at this point in the season, you never want to play. I don't want to play the Panthers because they're going to get a win at some point. You don't want to be that team that gives them the win. But the Bears lost Justin Fields to a hand injury. So we'll see what happens. I mean, the Bears very well may be okay with that considering the amount of first round draft picks that they got. And right now they're slated to have the number 1 and 2 pick, which I can't wait to get into the offseason. Should Chicago have the 1 and 2 pick? What do they do? You know, if you're either going to go with Caleb and, you know, I don't know, Marvin Harrison Jr., or are you going to take a Caleb and then offload that number 2 pick and trade down for multiple first round picks and just stay with Justin Jefferson or Justin Fields? That'll be a fun thing to discuss. The Dolphins, you know, running roughshod over the Panthers as expected, which was your survivor pick, I believe. So chalk another win up to you. Texans at 500 beating the Saints. I thought that was, you know, good. Again, you kind of keep an eye on these other, you know, the D'Amico Ryans of the world. Yeah, good for D'Amico. But I think the Eagles losing and the Seahawks losing to the Bengals took the sting out of the Niners losing just a bit, just because in the grand scheme of things, they didn't lose ground for home field or the number 1 seed. They're still in position to take care of business, you know, this week against Minnesota, take care of business when they play Seattle and Philadelphia. That will be interesting. And the Bills hung on by the hair of their chinny chin chin, thanks to a missed call by the referees. And like you talked about with the Niner game, the Bills beat the Giants thanks to a blown or a non-call, which saved my survivor pick. So I will move on to the next week with another pick. So that's kind of around the NFL, but I want to talk about the Vikings preview here, if you will, because we're at the point of the season that stats are starting to mean something. You know, after week one, you would have thought Drake Jackson was going to set the all-time sacks record because he had 3 against Pittsburgh, and I don't think he's got one, might have one since there. But, you know, we're almost a third of the way through the season. So you're starting to, you know, take notice of what these stats mean. So tell me if any of these move you in terms of what it means for the Niners in their game Monday night. Minnesota has a blitz rate of 33%, which is the highest in the NFL. So much like the Niners saw against the Giants, I would imagine the Vikings are going to come guns a-blazing at Brock Purdy, and we saw what Purdy did against the Giants. So does that fall more into positive for the Niners? Should they stay the course in terms of blitzing that much? Or do we need to worry because the offensive line and what happened against the Browns, you know, was a little bit concerning?
Against the Browns, did they blitz much? I know that they people are making a big deal that they went heavy on the man coverage, but I don't know if they went man coverage and they blitzed, or if it was just man coverage and their D-line, with even without blitzing, just overwhelmed our offensive line.
It was they blitzed very little.
So any chance Minnesota and Brian Flores, despite their tendencies on blitzing, they see what flummoxed young Purdy and decide, let's try that. Let's, you know, they think we're going to, you know, zig and we will zag, as you said, when it comes to Brandon Staley.
I don't think so, only because you really got to play to your personnel, right? And the Vikings don't have a very formidable front four. So in order to generate pressure, they've had to bring blitzes. The strength of their defense lies up the middle with middle linebackers and safeties. They're more vulnerable on the edges, according to the statistic. But the outside receivers are the ones that are accumulating yards. So just like the Cowboys game, where they were very vulnerable up the middle, and what so happened? George Kittle had a great game, right? He was open and got his touchdowns. Whereas, okay, now if the perimeter's where you need it, maybe this could be a big Ayuk game, which is why I kind of think that if you could only play CMC or Debo, this might be, you know, it might be worth having Debo out there, because again, you're talking about get him those tunnel screens, you know, get the ball in his hands out in space. You can rely on JP Mason or Elijah Mitchell for your old fashioned running back plays, you know, the stretch zone, those types of things that Kyle likes to run. But can we get Debo into the mix because of his strength without hurting him anymore? So that would be interesting. The Vikings offense is ranked 15th and their defense is ranked 13th. So statistically, it does not sound like a, you know, two-win team. Now, some of that is skewed because Kirk Cousins is the king of garbage time points, and they put up a lot of yards and points, you know, when they're playing catch-up. So could be a little bit deceiving, but it certainly doesn't look like they're 25th in offense and 30th in defense, and that explains why they're so bad. They've also been a team of very bad luck. They've lost an NFL high 9 fumbles. So you're talking about not only putting the ball on the ground, but not being able to fall on it, the ball bouncing the wrong way, which the Niners are on the other side, have the most takeaways in the NFL. So we saw Fred Warner punch the ball out. So could they get the ball on the ground a little bit more and create some of those turnovers? The Vikings are ranked 27th on third down and 19th in the red zone. So that's their defense seems to be, okay, we're good first and second down between the 20s, but third down, we're giving up a lot of yards. You get into the red zone, we're giving up a lot of points. And we talked about missing Justin Jefferson, and Kirk Cousins, I thought this was going to be a lot wider margin, but he's 7-11 in primetime. I was under the impression he was like 2-30. I mean, the way they talk about him, like, oh, he can't play primetime. Like, you would have thought the guy, you know, the lights come on and he just, you know, turns into a bubbling buffoon. But 7-11, you know, so not great when you want your quarterback to shine the brightest, and we've seen him in the playoffs, but do any of those stats? Oh, and the Vikings ranked 25th as a running team. So could this be a game that the Niners front four, you know, can simply do their job and shut down the run. Any of those stats mean anything to you? Anything sway you to think the Niners have the advantage? Anything to sway you to think Minnesota's got to use this to their advantage if they want to have a shot?
And who have they played this year? I know they've only beaten the dregs of the league. So, I mean, I don't know if their stats are based on jumping all over the teams that they've actually beaten, or even against the teams that they've lost to, they weren't exactly world beaters.
So they, let's see here. Who are we talking about here? Oh, the Vikings. I'll pull that up for you. Schedules. Vikings schedule. They lost opening weekend to Baker Mayfield 20-17. They lost a fairly close game to the Eagles 34-28. They lost to the Chargers 28-24. They beat the Panthers 21-13. They lost to the Chiefs 27-20. They beat the Bears 19-13. So
they played a couple of quality teams.
They've played a couple quality teams and lost, and but lost, you know, relatively close games. I mean, they lost to the Eagles by 6, they lost to the Chargers by 4, and they lost to the Chiefs by 7. So they're not getting blown out.
Yes, I don't know. I think the only way the Niners lose is if they don't show up or if there's inclement weather on Monday night in Minnesota.
Yeah, they're inside.
Oh, that's right. Forgot about that. And yeah, so I guess otherwise, no Justin Jefferson. So I don't think their offense is going to get too much traction against what should be a very pissed off Niners defense.
Agree. I haven't seen, have you seen any update on Dre Greenlaw?
I have not, but they don't practice. So we're recording this Wednesday night, and I was kind of surprised that they didn't practice today, but apparently they're getting back to it tomorrow on Thursday. So I'm sure we'll have an update then.
Yeah. One of the big questions was if the Niners were going to stay back east because of the back-to-back games on the road. They did not for a number of reasons. One, the fact that they're playing Minnesota Monday night. So they got an extra day. They got back to San Jose Airport at a reasonable time. I think they got back like around 6 or 7 o'clock. So they were back. Guys were in their bed sleeping on Sunday night there in terms of a regular week of rest. Also, Minnesota isn't in the Eastern time zone. It's central. So you're not going, you know, Minnesota sounds far because it's the Great White North, but you're actually not having to travel that far, and your body clock would only be 2 hours off. Plus it's Monday night. You know, it's not even as if you got to get used to that 1 o'clock time frame. And according to Kyle, the players don't really like having to stay, you know, away from their families, away from their own bed. Sometimes it's probably beneficial when you're doing two, you know, you're playing New York and Philly, you're playing Washington and, you know, Atlanta. But when you don't have to fly all the way over there, I think the players much prefer coming home to sleep in their own bed and get their rest. And again, with an 8-day work week, it's much easier to do that. But you mentioned the quick turnaround the following week. That's where I think this is going to be, you know, a tougher turnaround. You're playing a tougher opponent, I believe, in the Bengals. You're playing it on a 1 day less rest because you're not going to get home till, I don't know, what, 4 or 5 in the morning, you know, after leaving Minnesota around midnight. So we'll have to see. Yeah, no update on Dre Greenlaw. I think if Greenlaw plays, that's going to be that'll be a huge boost to the defense. So,
and I know the players would prefer coming home and sleeping in their own beds and whatnot, but I believe there's always value in having that kind of a, what do you call it? Not a road trip, but you know, one of these weeks where they have to stay together, and it's like a bonding. I think it's like a good bonding opportunity. I don't know when you're professionals, if that's still a thing, especially for a lot of these guys who are, you know, veterans. longtime veterans of the league, but still, I just feel like it's always good for a team to bond like that, that you wouldn't have a chance otherwise to do so.
Yeah. Well, it's one of the things that was always unique to training camp. Teams used to always go away for camp, right? They would
Rockland.
The Niners would always go to Rockland, and then they would go out to Stockton, you know, play to have training camp at the University of the Pacific. So, and you know, whether it's because of money or convenience or not having to uproot the entire, you know, organization and weight room, whatever it means, that, you know, teams don't, very few teams go away to camp, which, you know, is, again, I guess it's a bummer, because as an older guy, when I was young, I always thought it was cool to make a trip to Rockland to see a practice or go to the University of Pacific and check them out and see them in this environment. But yeah, they don't do that. But yeah, well, I mean, could be. Bonding could be good. I don't know. Is it better to bond after a win? Like, had you beat Cleveland, you're feeling good all week, or you lost to Cleveland and you really don't want to see anybody for a couple days? I'll get back to it, you know, on Tuesday or Wednesday when this bitter taste is out of my mouth. So, all right. A couple things. People are big fans of the Get to Know Jerry segment. So we got
to know Jerry. What about Todd?
You know, people don't care. I'm telling you, you are much more controversial, decisive.
Controversial.
I'm telling you, I told you your two breakfast food that just threw people off was very, you know, controversial, maybe strong, but you know, it was, you know, boy, can this guy just do anything normal? Can he just have bacon and eggs? No, he's got to have, you know, something that I've never seen on a menu. So, but we're going easy today, because the two questions are, what's your go-to snack on a football Sunday? And what are your three most used emojis on your phone?
Oh, all right. Well, let me take a look at my phone. I'm sure the most used for sure has to be the smiley face with the tears, the laughing tears face.
Yep.
I'm sure that is one. The thumbs up.
Yep.
And the poop. Those are three most heavily used emojis.
Nice.
I don't think that's too controversial, but
no, that's,
you get back to me on what our audience members think of that.
See if the audience thumbs up your thumbs up or gives poop to your poop. So we'll see. So mine are the thumbs up emoji, always just a quick and easy. Got it, agree, yes, whatever it is. The face palm emoji, which
that is so you,
indicates my frustration. And I would have thought it was maybe either the laughing or the crying one, but actually my next most used my next most used is the whiskey glass. So again, probably speaks more to me, but in terms of the face emoji, that is the one with the big eyes, like shocked, you know, with the shocked expression. So you're either getting a thumbs up for good job, a face palm because you frustrate me, or the big eyes because I'm in disbelief. So that was it. So, and your go-to football snack food.
Not to be difficult, but are we talking on an average Sunday? Are we talking at like your, you know, Super Bowl soiree?
If you have different views for those, please enlighten me.
Well, when I watch the Niners, it is such, well, I would say in past years with Jimmy G as quarterback, it has been such a stressful ordeal that I actually don't snack. I don't eat. It's just so it would be no snacking. But if I were to snack just on an average Sunday, I mean, if it were a food that I would order, like that I just didn't have lying around, it would be pizza. But if it was something that I just had at home, it'd probably be like, I don't know, Oreos or something like that. You know, the Christian McCaffrey special.
Yeah.
But at your Super Bowl parties, I would say it'd have to be the King's Egg Roll.
Yes, always go to. That's a special football game right there when you get the tray of egg rolls. Yes. I would have to say my regular go-to on a regular Sunday would either be just some wings in the air fryer, make it, you know, crisp those up, or just give me some, you know, chips and salsa and keep it filled, you know, as I, you know, emotionally eat or stress eat throughout the game, depending on the outcome. So very nice. We talked about the survivor pool. We both won. You took the Dolphins. I took the Bills. Both of us have only lost once this season. So, you know, teams are starting to thin themselves out. It's not so easy, especially this week. Very few. I don't think there's any double-digit spreads. So, no stone cold locks, but what do you got for survivor pool this week?
Yeah, lots of close matchups this week. And I mean, and I think the best game that I'm looking forward to watching is Miami at Philly, yes, which I don't think I'll be able to watch. Oh no, I will be able to watch it
Sunday night.
Yep. But my lock of the week will be the Seahawks, because they're playing at home, coming off a tough loss to the Bengals. And I think Arizona will still be without their quote-unquote, I'm going air quotes, tough guy, James Conner. So give me Seattle as this week's lock of the week.
Make this quick. I was actually debating between Seattle and the Niners for those same reasons. I think they're both going to have bounce backs. I think the Niners are going to win, but at this point I was going to lean towards the Seahawks. Taking out the Cardinals. So I'm going to go that way. So we're both on the Seattle bandwagon, at least for a week. That said, anything else on your mind, Niner related? I mean, we did spend an inordinate amount of time about the loss. I think overall it was a bad game. It was a bad game all around, whether it's Kyle, Jake Moody, we didn't even mention Ayuk caught that deep ball and ran it into the end zone, like it hit him right in the hand, like that's a 17-0 game, and that changes things. I just think it was a rough game all the way around. It's one of those that I hope the coaches just go, look, it's gonna happen. Let's, you know, chalk it up, be better, and move on, and you know, not have a losing streak. So let's put everything together and go beat the Vikings. So
yeah, not catching the ball in that one Ayuk play, the Christian McCaffrey wheel route where he was wide open. I mean, that was an automatic six right there. So
that was brutal.
Yeah, it was rough. It was rough for young Brock Purdy. I mean, again, I'm not jumping off the bandwagon, but you know, it's like one of those where you knew he's going to have a bad game at some point, but man, for it to, I don't want to say hit rock bottom. I mean, he did sort of lead them back to put him in a position to win at the end, but that was rough. That was a very rough game for him on Sunday.
Agreed. So you get to wait an extra day, you get to watch a full Sunday of NFL action before you mentioned the big Sunday night game, Eagles Dolphins, and then Monday night where the Niners get, you know, all the eyes of the nation focused on them against the Vikings. That'll be fun. Hopefully the Niners seem to be, you know, really good in prime time recently. I think Kyle, for whatever reason, decides that those are the games he dials up his 18 flea flicker, you know, plays to get George Kittle. Hopefully it's another one of those. We talked about this could be hopefully a Bosa game, Bosa coming out party. Like, all right, you've had your warm up reps. Now let's go, you know, let's go eat. Let's go get some sacks. So extra day to wait and then watch on Monday night. So before we get out of here, final thought.
I actually have three.
Oh, three. That's a lot of thoughts for you.
Well, the first was one I wanted to mention earlier in terms of the Niner, or in terms of trades, because the trade deadline
is coming up. Yeah.
And, you know, for me, if I were the Niners, I'd be pulling out all the stops to win the Super Bowl, and I'd go out and trade for Broncos left tackle Garrett Bowles. Because I feel like Trent Williams, he's getting up there in age, and he always seems to get hurt a little bit, you know, during the season. And I just, you know, and I'm not confident in Jalen Moore. So I think to have somebody like Garrett Bowles ready at the helm to jump in, or even, you know, who knows? I mean, the line wasn't great this week. So whether it be insurance for Williams or even Colton McKivitz, should he get hurt or backslide, I just feel like protecting Purdy should be their top priority. And I know that Isaiah Oliver, I don't feel like he really did anything to warrant us questioning whether or not he can handle that slot position, but there are rumors that Jeremy Chinn of Carolina might be available on the trading block. And I mean, if he can man that slot and be good in coverage, I mean, that would be a huge upgrade. So, I mean, I feel like those are two players the Niners should have on their radar in terms of potential trades. And because of all these injuries, I was going to talk about how, like, you know, I know that the running backs have expressed dismay about teams not wanting to pay them top dollar. But, man, you look at all the running backs who are already hurt and out of action, right? I mean, Kyren Williams of the Rams just ran for 158 yards, and now he's on IR. So as much as I think running backs deserve to get paid because of the pounding they endure and the importance that they have, for each team, but I just think that these organizations will never come around to it because they can just plug someone else in. You know, granted, nobody is going to replace like a Nick Chubb for the Browns or the Christian McCaffrey for the Niners, but most running backs can be interchangeable. And I think that's the conundrum that running backs are unfortunately facing. Mm-hmm. And speaking of unfortunate circumstances, we recently learned that Suzanne Summers died from breast cancer and that Bruce Willis is struggling with, I think, dementia. And upon hearing about those two iconic actors, it made me reflect on how fortunate we were to have experienced all the great shows and movies from their era. And then I started feeling like, you know, I think part of the problem we're having in society where everyone's so mad and fighting at stadiums is because the sitcom genre has seemingly just gone away. And because we're no longer experiencing the joy and laughter we used to get on a nightly basis, I think that's changed us. I mean, think about all the great comedies we grew up with. And now all we get are like 10 iterations of SVU or Law and Order and just a bunch of crazy reality shows. So I propose that as a part of this actors and writers strike that I still believe is still going on, I propose that they need to negotiate to have more sitcoms back in the rotation. It's what I believe will truly make America great again.
sounds like you're running for office. Or
well, it dawned on me.
At least head of some network, you know.
Well, it dawned on me when out of nowhere, I don't know, I started singing the Who's the Boss theme song as I was tidying up the house.
What?
And then I thought about all the shows that I knew the theme songs for and realized that we don't have any good sitcoms anymore, and we don't have even any of the iconic theme songs to go with, right? Like, I think Friends might be the last one, which everyone knows the song to because, well, it's still in syndication, I think on Nickelodeon, right? Nickelodeon? You know, but where's the new Cheers, right? Where everybody knows your name, right? Come on, yeah. Todd. Sing one with me. Tell me a show that you loved growing up, a sitcom that you know their theme song to. There are like so many of them.
Oh, there's, you know, I probably couldn't give you the opening bars, but like Family Ties, Growing Pains. I mean, all of those. Who you mentioned?
Show me that smile again. Come on, do it, Todd.
Perfect Strangers. You want to talk about standing tall? You know, yeah, Balky
Yes.
Barbados up there. Yeah.
On the wind of my wings. Is that what it is?
Yeah, 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 yeah. So.
And remember Silver Spoons.
Silver
Here
Spoons.
We are face to face.
Yep.
Couple of silver spoons.
Different
Dude, I could go all night.
Clearly, we know what your go-to karaoke is, which, so I guess we, you know, maybe that'll be next week's question. What's your go-to karaoke? So we'll see. My final thought is it's a happy birthday again, but it's kind of a secondary because it's happy birthday, Zac Efron. Why Zac Efron? That's kind of how, well, I came across the trailer for Iron Claw. Have you seen the trailer for Iron Claw?
No. What is so, Iron Claw?
Iron Claw is the story of the Von Erich family from wrestling.
Wrestler.
Yes. Multiple wrestlers. Dad, five sons, Carrie, Kevin.
They did a movie about that wrestling family?
Well, yes, because of how tragic it is. Like, I believe, like, four of the sons either died in the ring or committed suicide, you know, while performers. And Terry Von Erich was the face of the Von Erichs. And this was in the, mid 80s. This is kind of when wrestling was really, this is Hulkamania. This is Mega Powers. This is the height of Macho Man Savage and Ricky Steamboat and all these guys. And the Von Erichs were out of Texas. But why this ties into Zac Efron is because Zac Efron plays Kevin Von Erich, one of the Von Erich brothers. And it's, again, you're not, if you weren't a wrestling fan, if you don't care about wrestling, it's probably not going to, you know, entice you to go see it. But if you were at all a wrestling fan, even tangentially, it's, you know, the trailer was outstanding, and I didn't even recognize that it was actually I recognized Zac Efron. I'm like, where's that guy from? Who is that? Like, he was so transformed into this just rip, like, looking. I mean, clearly there were some chemical enhancements, no doubt. Hard to say you went from High School Musical to looking like you know, that, but and then I'm like, oh my gosh, that's Zac Efron. But the trailer was, you know, caught me. I was a big wrestling fan growing up in the 80s. So I'm looking forward. The movie comes out, I think, in December. So the trailer's out there. Happy birthday, Zac Efron, as you're getting ready to, you know, hit the silver screen as one of the Von Erich brothers. So that's my final thought. One thing to follow up your final thought, and that is the NFL trade deadline, I believe, is Halloween. I believe it's October 31st. So after this week, you know, you're going to have one more week for teams to either seem, are you in or are you out? Are we going to sell off pieces for draft capital, or are we going to, you know, accumulate some depth? Are we going to accumulate some stars? So next week, I think we should, you know, kind of dive in to see what teams might be, you know, looking to offload some of their pieces. So we can get into that, which will be a week before the trade deadline. So thanks for everyone for listening to the Niner Guys. I'm Todd. That's Jerry. Poop emoji, thumbs up emoji, laughing emoji, Jerry. We will see you hopefully next week, or, you know, talk to you next week after the Niners get back on into the winning column, taking on the Vikings. Boy, you know, getting a nice win on Monday night would really close the book on what's been a rough, rough sports week. So for Jerry, I'm Todd. Thanks for listening to the Niner Guys. We'll see you next week. Good night.